Ramsey TV.
The closer one gets to God, the lonelier it is. The closer it gets, the lonelier you get. This is a divine principle. It never changes. It's always been that way, and it will always be that way. And I don't have to tell you this. You already are experiencing it. But I thought it would be helpful for everyone if I show you a scriptural precedent. And you will see that indeed it is standard operating procedure. This is Martin Zender. Welcome to MZTV, the world's most outspoken Bible scholar here. Thanks for tuning into the show. I'm glad you're here. I need to talk to you every day. I need this. You tell me you need it. I need it too. It's really important for us to do this. So, you know, early in our Christian walk, we liked the excitement and the unity of a lot of people. There was a lot of activity in the Christian religion. And the one thing I hear from people who know the truth, but they are hesitant to walk the lonely walk, and the first apostasy they dabble in is wanting to go back. But this was Israel's experience in the wilderness. The first thing they wanted to do when it got lonely and tough is they wanted to go back to Egypt. They liked the food there. They liked the fellowship there. There was more company in Egypt. Yeah, they were slaves, but that's just a minor detail. They looked at a life of slavery as better as long as it involved fun food and fellowship. And believe me, these people had more fun, more food, and more fellowship as slaves in Egypt than they did walking with that freakazoid Moses in the wilderness. That is the truth. They grumbled all the time. They ended up looking back. And Jesus ends up saying, anyone who takes the yoke of service upon him or herself and looks back is not worthy of the kingdom. These people looked back all the time. And I'm telling you, one of the main reasons was it was lonely. I mean, yeah, there were a lot of Israelites. What do you mean lonely? There were a lot of Israelites. Yeah, but there were the markets in Egypt where they could hobnob with the other people. They were still allowed to go to the markets, I believed. I mean, it's not like these people were chained up at night. They were like indentured servants. You know, they had their own quarters. I'm sure that some were abused at times. I mean, but it's not like you see in the movie, The Ten Commandments, where there's always being beaten. And I don't think it was like that. They had good food. They had healthy food. And they hobnobbed with the Egyptians. And there was something about it that was to be preferred over the wilderness. And I think part of it was there was more of a social life. Let's put it that way. With Moses, it was all business. There was no social life. You know, I always use the Titanic analogy, and I think that applies here. You would rather be on the Titanic, even though it's tilting a little bit, you know, after it strikes the iceberg. You'd rather be there than on those dinky little boats being lowered over the side of the ship. It just seems safer. There's more people there. And it seems lonelier on those boats. Yeah, it is. It's cold. It's lonely. And this is often the way with spiritual maturity. It's always the way with spiritual maturity. And the first example I want to give you is the tabernacle system. There were six different courts or different places in Israel's tabernacle system. And it went from populous to not very populous. It went from farther away from God to closer to God. And as this system progressed, I'm going to go through every court here. You got lonelier and lonelier. There were fewer and fewer people. You start with a court of the Gentiles. Court of the Gentiles. Look at any cutaway or any layout of the Israelite tabernacle system or the temple system, and you'll see the court of the Gentiles. Anybody could go there. The Gentiles could look over that wall called the Sorek, and they could say, oh, look at those Israelites. These people know God. God lives in that building over there. So they could look at it from afar with their binoculars. the court of the Gentiles. Anybody could go there. So it's very crowded, very excited, lots of milling around, lots of voices and dust being kicked up, and probably people selling things, probably some coffee shops, some snack bars, things like that. The court of the Gentiles. Then there's a court of women. Now, beyond the court of the Gentiles, no Gentile could go. So you have only Israelites now. And with the first court within the court where the Israelites only could go was the court of the women. After this, you had the Israelite court. I don't know why that. I looked this up, but I don't know why they separate the court of women from the Israelite court. Let me put it this way. I'm going to tweak this. I don't like this. The Israelite court includes the court of women. To simplify this for you, let me just say this. The next court after the court of the Gentiles was a court of the Israelites. Okay? I don't want to distinguish women from men in this example. It doesn't apply. So obviously, when you get past that wall, and it's still part of the court of the Gentiles is still considered part of the temple system. You're still in the precinct of God. It's not like you're out in the wilderness under a sycamore tree, out in the back 40. You're in the environs of God, but you just can't get past that wall. So only Israelites are allowed in the Israelite court, of course. Then you have the priest's court. Now you had to be a Levite. And so you had to be a special Israelite. So the Israelites were special among all the nations, and the priests were special among all the Israelites. Only they could go into the priest's court. This would be the court where the laver was, the altar of slaughter, where they sacrificed the animals and they washed their hands. The laver would be the washing place. The altar would be where the sacrifices were done. And there was some activity here. It was an exciting place. If you were a priest, those poor animals got led in. Meh. They were excited at first, but when they found out what was going on there, they're like, meh. Yeah, so, but there was activity there. Wash, got to load up the special rooms alongside the holy, the priest court where they stored the wood and the oil. So you had to keep those places supplied. You have to bring out the wood, put it on the altar, refill the laver with water. I'm sure there's a place where the priest's garments were and they're all getting duded up. It's kind of like church, kind of like church. In the Christian analogy, it would be you don't go to church. What? You don't go to church? You're in the court of the Gentiles. You're in the court of the Gentiles. You're no good. You can look at God from afar, but you're not in. This is kind of a negative example, but it's the same thing. So in church, you're a special people now. Ah, but within the church, ladies and gentlemen, within the church, there are special people. You have the worship team. Oh, the worship team. Don't get me started. These are special people. They are elect people. They are a select people. They are super cool, as I said in an earlier video. And there's not as many of them. So see, in that world, even when you get closer to what they consider the ultimate experience with God, but sorry, I didn't mean to chuckle. But, let's say when you get further into the apostasy, you know, that many on the worship team, then you have the pastors, the staff, you have the youth minister, you have the music minister, the worship minister, the donut minister, you have the pastor at large, but I suppose I should have started outside of that because they all have their staffs. You have the church secretary, you have the person in charge of the crying room. That's where I would go. If I went to church, I would say, could you please direct me to the crying room? Because if I have to listen to this sermon, I'm going to break down in tears. All right, put Martin Zender in the crying room. So I'll be in there with the babies going, wah, wah, wah. So you have the staff. Okay, so you got the outsiders, no God for you. Then you have the church people. Then you have the worship team. Then you have the staff. Maybe it's the staff and the worship team. I don't know. Don't know too much about church. Just taking pot shots here. So after that, then you have the pastoral staff. Then you have the high priest of the Christian world, which is the pastor. Or in the Catholic Church, it's the priest. See, the further you go along, there's only one head guy. All right, I'm done with that example. Thank goodness. So in the Israelite court system, the legitimate spiritual system here, you have the excitement of the priest court, but then you have the temple proper, which consists of two places, the holy place and the holy of holies. And as you get into the temple proper, into the holy place where the altar of incense is and the showbread is laid out, you close a door and it's quiet in there. And only certain priests, I think, are allowed in there. Certain ceremonies are performed. You don't have the noise of the laver and the altar. There's no bleating of the animals or bleeding of the animals. And so it's a place more dedicated to worship, i.e. the altar of incense. So less activity, fewer people. And then, ladies and gentlemen, then the Holy of Holies, only one man once a year was allowed in the presence of God. I mean, this was legit. I'm not talking about a Christian church here. This is a real worship team when you have the priests in the holy place and then the high priest once a year going into the Holy of Holies. The illustration, of course, is that the further you go in the Israelite system, the closer you get to the Shekinah glory, the presence of God between the wings of those cherubim above the Ark of the Covenant, you have fewer and fewer people, less and less noise, you have more and more loneliness, and in the Holy of Holies, it's just you and God, and it is dead, freaking quiet. And the only light of the place is the light of the glory of God, because it's surrounded by curtains. Of course, the great veil separates it from the holy place before it, and it is extremely lonely, but you're in the presence of God. And that is extremely lonely. Showing you the pattern here. And this is true with our Lord also. As he's starting his 3.5 year ministry, he's got his 12 disciples with him, and he's attracting people because he's doing miracles. He's feeding the 5,000 in the wilderness. The people are loving him because he's doing works. He's talking bad about their priests, which they love. No man's ever spoken like this. And he exposed them, and obviously with people being healed, there's a lot of activity. But as our Lord walks to set his face to go to Jerusalem to give himself up for the sins of the world, it gets lonelier and lonelier. You see, as he gets close to the cross and he starts saying some hard sayings, people start leaving him because he's saying hard things like, you must eat my body and drink my blood, speaking completely metaphorically there. And rich man asked him, what do I have to do to get into the kingdom of heaven? Give all you own to the poor. The kingdom of heaven being on earth, the Israelite kingdom on earth, the 1,000-year kingdom. Give everything you have to the poor. Pick up your cross and come with me. It was exciting before that. I don't really want to do that. I have a lot of stuff. And many people left him as he gets closer to the cross because his face is changed. He's set to go to Jerusalem to face the most crucial hours of the Aeonian times of the universe, of universal history. Then he gets to the Garden of Gethsemane. Well, let me back up. He gets to the upper room and the Passover meal, and there's only 12 there. His heart is heavy. The hour is coming. And then they go to the Garden of Gethsemane, and he takes only 3. Peter, James, and John. It gets lonelier and lonelier, right? The closer you get to that cross. Even they can't stay awake with him. He's arrested. The sham trial transpires, and he goes to the cross. He alone is pinned on the Roman stake of execution. But that's where the greatest accomplishment takes place. All alone. No one else can do this. This is the high priest. This is the high priest in the holy place. Offering the blood. Now, our experience. Of course, it's not as dramatic as all that, but it is. But it is. We all had the exciting Christian experience. Fun food and fellowship. But then God began to reveal himself to us. And the more God revealed to us about the deeper truths of what Christ accomplished, of who God is, who Christ is, fewer and fewer people could accompany us. They weren't getting the same revelations we were. And we look around and nobody's there. Where'd everybody go? And this is the hardest thing for people who come into the truth, and they're so tempted they want to go back to Egypt. They want to go back to their churches. And I know people who have done this. I know people who have the mature truths, and they want to go back to church, and they do. And they last maybe a month or two, and then they can't take it anymore. They realized then why they left Egypt in the first place. And so, come out of her, my people. There's the cry, come out of her, my people, do not become partakers of her sins, because her sins have risen to heaven. Sins against God, against his name, against his character, against his purpose, against his Christ. Their sins have arisen, and hour is coming, hour of judgment is coming on the earth, and you don't want to be anywhere near where the fun food and fellowship is. Stay on the lonely walk. The lonely walk proves that you are on the right walk. I made a video earlier about the Christian movement. How can these people consider themselves on the narrow way? They're the most popular religion on the planet. They're all the musicians and movie stars, the pop icons, they wear their crosses. And it's noisy. It's celebratory. The noise that must occur when these worship teams and musical people play, it's just keep walking, and that all will disappear, and you'll find yourself one day in your room by yourself on your knees or with your face to the ground praying to God for more revelation. And when you're desperate for revelation like that, he will give it to you. And there, it's just you and God, and you come to the realization that Jesus died for my sins, that I'm no different than any other human being, but God called me into his intimate presence. He called me into this holy place, showed me himself, showed me his work, showed me his character, showed me his son. And when you have God's company, you have everything you need. And the Apostle Paul, just like us, as he goes on and on and on, he gets to a Roman prison and he says, all have forsaken me. Luke alone is with me. And then he says, in my final testimony, no one stood with me, but the Lord stood with me. And if you have the Lord standing with you, and you do, that is all you need.